It is November 29th, 2008. Welcome to episode number 4 of Digital Photography Life. I'm Scott Sherman.
And I'm Michael Stein.
And on today's show, we have our first photo contest. We'll also go over basic photographic principles for emphasizing your subject, and we'll get digital camera buying advice from an expert on the field, Ron Risman, who runs Cameratown.com.
But first, the theme music.
Well, welcome back to another show, Michael.
Welcome back, everyone, to listening to our show.
And happy post-Thanksgiving.
Yes, to you too.
Are you stuffed?
I've eaten moderately well. I try not to overdo it.
Well, good, good. Did you button your pants this morning?
Yes.
Well, then you're fine.
I'm all buttoned and zipped.
Thank you all for listening. Today, I think we're going to have a great show. We're going to be doing some more kind of basic photographic principle stuff, which we haven't gotten yet on this show, away from some of the tech side of things and the what's new part of digital photography and back to how to shoot better pictures. So I think that'll be fun for a little change of pace because we don't like to get stuck, right?
We don't want to be in a rut.
Then we'll have an interview with Ron Risman from Cameratown.com. Ron is a former retailer in photography. He used to sell photographic equipment, so he knows the tricks that stores and online operations use to get the most money out of you. He also knows the tricks that you can use to get the very best deal. So he'll tell us about that after the break today. Ron will also be doing a giveaway for an M-Rock camera bag. So make sure you stay tuned to the end of the interview to hear how you can get that nice bag. It looks really sweet.
Sounds nice. But
it is nice. I've looked at it online, Michael.
I haven't. But it sounds nice.
It is nice, Michael. Why don't you be nice and tell everybody where they can find us?
Yeah, our main show page is photography.personallifemedia.com. You can email us at digitalphotographylife@gmail.com. And that is not dplife@gmail.com. It's digital.
I think last show I gave the wrong address.
Oh, did you really?
I gave the right address and the wrong address.
Yeah, I would have liked that one. It would have been a nice address.
Somebody else had it. So somebody got a lot of email for us last week.
Who are these people? But it is digitalphotographylife@gmail.com. You can also Twitter us at twitter.com/dplife. You can follow us there. And to get our show notes, you can go to scottsphotoblog.com.
And over on scottsphotoblog.com, you'll also get all the links to everything we talk about in the show, sometimes some hints to help you with the contest entries. And thanks to our wonderful sponsor, Smug Mug, who we love. Thank you, Smug Mug. It is the best place to share and sell your photos. You can get a discount. Because they're sponsoring us, Smug Mug is giving all listeners of Digital Photography Life 50% off the first year of service. That is a very rare and very large discount. So be sure to check that out. And for every listener of Digital Photography Life, they're giving away a free camera strap, which is a very nice padded camera strap. The one that came with your camera is probably a piece of canvas that you think is designed to actually sever your neck because they're so incredibly uncomfortable. So to get your free camera strap, there'll be a link on Scott's photo blog. Just click through, put in your information, and Smug Mug will take care of you. Now, we're also starting a new email address with this episode, because what happens is that every week we get hundreds, if not thousands, of contest entries to our Gmail account. And if somebody writes in with a question or a comment or a suggestion for the show, it gets buried in all those photo contest entries. So from now on, we're going to ask that you send your contest entries to DPL for Digital Photography Life, DPL Contests with an S, dplcontests@gmail.com. If you can't remember that, I'll put the link on Scott's photo blog, which you should have committed to memory by now, as well as a bookmark. That'll just make it easier for us to administer the contest. And it will also mean we don't lose your questions and comments, which we hate to do amongst everything else that's coming in. So in the interview I do today with Ron Risman, I tell you to send your entries to the digitalphotographylife@gmail.com address. If you do it for this episode, that's fine. We'll use the entries for both, since I gave out the wrong information in the interview. But moving forward, contest entries to dplcontests@gmail.com. That makes sense?
It makes total sense. And there are two S's in that word, right? DPL what? Contests, and there's an S at the end.
That's true. There are two S's. It took me a while to figure out
where. You said it says an S in there, and I was just saying, actually, there are two S's to be
clear. Well, an S at the end.
Yep.
Okay. Add an S for Scott at the end.
S for savings.
Plural. So let's get into the show. Now, the last couple of shows, we focused a lot on technology, a lot on some of the new emerging digital cameras that are coming out there and the sensors. And somebody actually wrote in to Scott's photo blog, somebody named Bibble. I love the names people use on the web. And Bibble's comment did not thrill me because for some reason he or she seemed to feel that they had to refer to me as annoying. I don't understand that, Michael.
Well, you can be a little annoying, but yeah.
Maybe a little.
I could be annoying too.
Just a tad around the edges. But Bibble also made a point that I had just been thinking, which is that the show has been kind of tech heavy without being too much into photographic advice and techniques. And there's been a little bit of an imbalance, partially just because there's a lot coming out. Michael and I, we don't have a real blueprint. We talk about whatever excites us or interests us at that moment. And we hope that if you're listening and if you're a fan of DP like we are, that you are interested in the same things we are. But we're going to get back to some shooting advice. So I appreciate that feedback from Bibble, even though Bibble called me annoying. You see, we look for the good, even amongst the bad, Michael. But we were both on the same track, Bibble. So I don't think Bibble's listening anymore. It sounded like a kiss-off note on the blog. But if you are, we have managed to make peace with you. And right. Your advice actually was exactly where we were. So today we will go back to basics with a focus on photographic principle. We're going to do it in a way that we often do, which is that we're going to talk about a specific kind of philosophy of how to get a better picture and then do a photo contest. In the photo contest, we're going to ask you to apply the principles that we talk about today, and we'll use those principles as our guiding methodology as we judge the pictures. Because Michael and I have done a lot of photo contests in the past, and we know that there's a lot of different ways to judge a photo. There's a lot of different criteria. It's a very subjective field. So this time, we're going to sort of let you know in advance what we're looking for in this picture. And for those of you who haven't heard one of our photo contests before, which we used to do on our old podcast, who we shall not name, we always have a celebrity guest judge, right, Michael?
We always do.
And they are usually a photographer like Rick Salmon or Scott Kelby or Kevin Kubota or some other professional in the field who gives their viewpoint. So if you send in a contest entry and you're selected as a finalist, your photo will be critiqued on air by a renowned photographer or instructor of photography yet to be announced, right?
Yes.
And that's not us.
We're going to talk about it, and someone else who's a real pro will also talk about it.
I mean, we're not the renowned one.
No, we're not renowned.
Okay. Well, we want to thank the prize sponsor for this photography contest, which is Think Tank Photo. They will be contributing a bag or a bag or a different kind of bag to the winner of the contest. The reason I picked them is because Ron Risman, well, I actually spoke about Think Tank Photo's urban disguise bag in the last show, I think. And then Ron Risman and I spoke about them again on today's episode because they're contributing a prize to one of his contests. So the winner of our first photo contest which we have to give a name. Michael, we forgot to give it a name. Oh, we do have a name, kind of, right?
Yeah.
Will be, you'll win either the Airport International Version 2 Roller. This is a very heavy-duty camera case that has rollers, just like the regular little suitcases you bring through the airport that will fit in the overhead or underseat compartment. It holds two pro-size DSLRs as well as lenses and other accessories. It's very well made. Their stuff is fantastic. It even has a front security cable and combination lock so that you can lock up your roller, which is very helpful when you leave it at the hotel. That's a $329 value. Not everybody needs a bag that big or heavy, or, you know, some people want something more for everyday shooting. In which case, you could also pick, if you are the winner of the contest, the Think Tank Photo Urban Disguise 40, which holds more gear than you ever imagined, holds a wide-angle lens with a hood attached, another big lens, your two pro-size DSLRs. It's a very nice camera bag. Doesn't look like a camera bag. That's the whole thing about the Urban Disguise line. So you can bring them with you when you're shooting, and it's not like you're wearing a big sign on you that says, hey, expensive camera in here. Looks like any kind of messenger bag. So that's a $149 value, and the winner will be able to choose. We don't want to choose. We'll let you guys choose whichever one.
You want to pick the thing that's right for you.
Right. Because they're both great bags, but people have different needs. So let's talk about the photo contest. First, we're going to go quickly over the three basic guidelines for a successful photo. Now, these come from the instructional materials offered by the New York Institute of Photography. For a long time, NYIP has been the leading instructor of photography in this country. Used to be that they conducted their courses by mail order. I did that like 10 years ago. I took a course of theirs where I mailed my pictures back and forth. Now, and listened on cassette tapes, now you can interact with them more on the web through CDs and DVDs. And you can also don't have to worry about these cassette tapes anymore. But they send you beautiful printed materials if you take a course with them. They're very instructive. They're really terrific. We're going to use their three basic guidelines in judging the entries for this photo contest. So, Michael, why don't you kind of quickly summarize what are their three basic principles for a successful photo?
Well, the first principle is a good photo should have a theme, a universal message. It should say something. So, you know, when you look at a photo, it should actually tell you something. A good photo should also focus its attention on the main subject of interest. So it's important when you look at the photo, you know what that subject is. And then also, a good photo should simplify.
Did you have trouble with the word simplify?
Simplify is very complicated for me to say. Mm-hmm. A good photo should simplify. Just include what is necessary and eliminate or minimize distracting elements. So you know, you don't want things sticking out of people's heads or focusing on this lady in the background. You know, you want to focus on your subject, and that subject should be telling you that story.
So let's just we're going to break them down a little bit more. The first principle is a good photo should have a theme, a universal message. You know, an example that they use in the New York Institute of Photography. Actually, I don't know. I think one they use in their instructional materials, or one I saw elsewhere, would be a bride and groom on their wedding day, or to be up to date, two grooms or two brides, if you live in Massachusetts or another enlightened state in this country. That picture could be taken in a way that it is clearly a picture of the couple where you see their faces and they're kind of distinctive and everybody looks at that picture and says, hey, that's Michael and Susan. Well, your wife is not Susan. That's Michael and Kate at their wedding. Or it could be taken in a way where maybe it's from the back, you can't see the faces, where it's clearly communicating the concept of marriage or the concept of love. That would be a universal theme. Another photo could be a nature photo, the beauty of nature, the simplicity of a flower. those would be universal themes, you know, not a picture of my flower pot, you know, in front of my house with my address on it, but something everyone can relate to. That is the first principle of a successful photo. For this contest, we are going to give you the theme. So this is what we want your photo to say to anyone who looks at it. And the theme is, you want to say what the theme is, Michael?
Oh, sure. The joy of photography.
You know, after we came up with this idea, I don't understand why we didn't call this podcast The Joy of Photography. I would have liked that. But it is, well, The Joy of Digital Photography. Hmm. So the theme that we want you to illustrate is the joy of photography. You can be very creative within this theme. Obviously, it could be a picture of somebody taking a picture, which and somehow they're doing it in a way that celebrates the artistry of taking the picture. It could be a photo of camera equipment that's taken in a way that makes it seem alive and appealing. An example of that is the logo for our show, which is, you can see that probably if you're listening to this on an MP3 player or on the web, it should display the cover art for the show. And the cover art is some photographic filters. And they're different colors, and they're all very bright, and they're kind of translucent and backlit. And if you know what a camera filter is, you look at it, and because of the use of color and the vibrancy of the image, it feels joyful and exciting. So you don't need a photographer to give the sense of joy in that picture. So something like that. Be creative. We love things that are a little bit off the beaten track, but that doesn't mean you can't shoot a photographer or someone with a camera, or somebody looking at a picture and enjoying it in a way that is not, that, you know, is more traditional, but is also very successful. So we've done the number one for you. We've given you the theme. The next guideline for successful photo is what we're going to focus on today, which is how do you focus attention on the main subject of interest in your photo? That's a very, very crucial part of taking and showing a good photograph. And the last element, which is that a good photo should simplify, include what is necessary while eliminating or minimizing distracting elements that we're not going to get into. You can figure out for yourself what that means, or you could take the NYIP course. You can find the New York Institute of Photography at nyip.com. But we're going to focus on number two and go through it probably for about 20 minutes. What are the things we can do to focus attention on the main subject of our photo? So we have a couple, I could probably count them, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 suggestions for you on how to do that. What is the first one, Michael?
The first one is emphasis through placement. And what we mean there is placement of the subject. So there is a concept. One concept is the rule of thirds, where instead of having your object in the middle, you would turn. Basically, you're splitting up your frame with like a tic-tac-toe board, and you're then moving your subject to one of those lines of the third. It's a rule of composition, I would say.
One of the intersects.
One of the intersects. And I would Google this and look it up if you're not familiar with the rule of thirds. But definitely keep that in mind, that you're offsetting your subject, so things are not right, they're not necessarily perfectly symmetrical all the time.
And that is classic photographic advice, because what is the thing that most amateurs do with the subject of their photo, Michael?
Well, they just put it right in the dead center. They shoot their photo, the little focus point's right in the middle, the little target's right there, and they point the target at the subject, and they get the subject right in the middle.
And what does Rick Salmon say about that kind of framing?
Rick says, dead center is deadly.
I love that line.
It is a great line. I use it all the time.
All right. So the general thinking is to do the rule of thirds, but is it a rule that is enforceable by law? Will you go to jail?
Yes, it is.
It
is a rule enforceable by law. The photo police will come and get you.
That's what I was afraid of. What is your thinking on the rule of thirds?
Well, I mean, the rules are made to be broken. The other part about it is, there are times where shooting in the dead center really does work well. And it really depends on the context of that subject and everything else that's going on in that frame. Also, there's, when you're going shooting off to the side, sometimes people will shoot all the way over to the very edge of the frame. And, you know, that might be too far. And it may not be. It really all depends on what you're shooting and the subject and, you know, what's going on in that picture. But keep in mind, you can also go overboard. I happen to like shooting at the edge of the frame. Because
you
I
do?
Yeah, I do.
Any particular reason?
I like shooting at the third or further to the left. I just find that you get you can see, you know, you have a subject and you have this other part of the photo, this whole other side.
That can also be successful, for example, if you have a person looking at a landscape and the person is on the far edge of your frame, they are looking at something that is then to the right and occupies the rest of your space. So the person's gaze is actually another tool directing you at the subject, which is the landscape, but the person works to emphasize that.
Yeah, and it might be in a landscape. I might put the subject that's in the foreground right on the left or the right and then have the rest of the photo lead out.
All right, well, that speaks
infinity.
To principle number – we're starting to get into principle number three, which we're going to build up to, okay?
Okay.
Because that's starting to relate to that.
Oh, okay. See how things are interrelated.
It is all interrelated. It actually is interesting that these rules are kind of overlapping. Some of them will naturally lead to another one. But emphasis through placement, number one, think about where your subject is in the photo. The general rule, which works for most photos that most photographers follow, is to go by what Michael calls the tic-tac-toe board, a good analogy of the rule of thirds. You want to be at the intersecting lines, the middle intersecting lines of that tic-tac-toe board, avoiding the center. But for some photos, the subject absolutely needs to be centered. So that is going to be case specific. But in general, remember, dead center is deadly. All right, the next way you can emphasize your subject is by making it bigger. There is a common mistake that amateur photographers make in travel photography. This is when you see somebody in New York City and they are taking a picture of their cousin in front of the Empire State Building, and they say, back up, I want to get the whole building in. Back up, I want to get you in the whole building in, all of you in all of the building. And when they get their picture back, there is a little tiny dot that is their cousin against the vastness of the Empire State Building. And you certainly don't get the understanding that the subject of the photo is Joe at the Empire State Building. You just get Empire State Building. But that person wanted a record of Joe being there, and they have not gotten it.
Well, Joe's a little dot, you know.
Well, I'm assuming that Joe is not in reality a little dot, that he's a full-size human being. So, of course, the way to avoid that is you have Joe much closer to you and the Empire State Building in the background, because what is larger in the frame in general, the relative size is important here. What is larger in your picture is what's going to be the center of attention. You need to move Joe up so that he remains the center of attention. Keep the Empire State Building. It's an important part of the story, but the subject is Joe. Don't lose the subject through size. The other thing about that is if you have a large subject that is clearly definable, you can have more things going on in the background without them being distracting. You can have the Empire State Building in the background as long as you don't frame it wrong and it looks like it's sprouting from the top of his head. That tells part of the story. It just does not dwarf the most important part of the story, which is Joe's adventures in New York. And I mean, if your name is Joe, I apologize for you.
Yeah, like if you're in middle of Times Square, everything is hustling and bustling. That's part of what Times Square is all about.
Right.
And so if you're taking a photo there, you're going to have a photo of a person in Times Square. But you're going to want that subject to be the subject as well.
Through the size. All right, let's go through the next principle, Michael. What is it?
Emphasis through framing. And framing is where you have a foreground of branches, of a tree, a doorway, a window. You have something naturally in your environment that is close to you that will actually create a frame around your subject. I remember seeing in many John Ford films, he's an old movie maker. He uses this concept a lot in his movie making. But I use it in my filming, in photography quite often.
Well, this is where you were starting to get into this when you were talking about placement, because you were talking about placement of foreground images on the side of an image, which is really framing. You're framing the image. Maybe the subject is mountains, and you're looking at them through the limbs of a tree. The limbs of the tree are forming the natural frame for that mountain. Somebody standing in a doorway, again, the doorway is the sides, and in the lit doorway, you see the person. Person's the subject. The doorway is actually working like a frame for your photo. Does not, Mike, I'm going to disagree with you a little bit, doesn't need to be in the foreground. That doorway could be on the same plane as your person. It just has to frame the subject.
No, it doesn't need to be in the foreground. It's just often I find that it is more in the foreground, and sometimes it's just out of focus. It doesn't necessarily need to be in focus. Sometimes it's better that it is in focus. It really depends. There's no rule here.
Okay, the rule here is you use something. It could be tree limbs. It could be a doorway. It could be a window in a house. Window in a car, you use something that forms a natural frame because human beings are conditioned to look at the subject of whatever is in a frame. So you use a natural element to form that frame, draws attention to it.
It's a good technique.
You could use a less traditional way of looking at it would be think of three people at a table, and one is sitting at one side of the table, one is sitting at the other side of the table. They have bored expressions on their face. The person in the middle is laughing. Subject of the photo, you know, is that person in the middle. The two bored people are working as a frame for your animated middle subject. They're giving you something, you know, by which to sort of offset and surround your subject. And because they're different, like a door is different than your subject and branches of a tree are different than the mountain, the bored people become a frame for your animated subject. So emphasizing through framing principle number three. Principle number four, emphasize through selective lighting. The typical way to do this, you can reverse it, it's generally not done, is to have a lighter subject, to have your subject lighter than everything else in the picture. The rest of the picture is darker. Because where will your eyes always go in a photo, Michael?
Your eyes tend to go to the lightest part of the image.
Which is why another common mistake we all make, take a nice photo, but if there's a bright light in the background, it's distracting. You don't want that. You want your subject to be the best lit thing in the photo in general. There are some photos that are successful by reversing that, but you know it's usually good to go with what works, which is to lighten up your subject. Now, something we didn't talk about earlier, Michael, which I meant to, is in judging these photos, Michael and I are completely agnostic when it comes to what you accomplished when you took the photo versus what you did in an image editing photo, like in an image editing program like Photoshop Elements or Photoshop or Picasa, whatever you may use, Aperture, Lightroom, whatever you may use. Post-processing, it's often very easy to increase the light on your subject and decrease the light on everything else in the photo. That's fine. Some people really care that you get the photo right in camera. You know, that's
a lot of people add an effect called vignetting.
Well, okay.
Sorry?
And you bring that up why?
Why? Because vignetting will darken, it can darken the edges of the photo.
All right.
And then brighten up the middle, or just leave the middle of the regular brightness, but simply darken the area around the subject.
Right. And for what I was talking about, vignetting can be done in camera. There are ways you could do that with filters, or it could be done, you can add a vignette in your photo processing software that accomplishes the same thing of darkening the edges of your photo. Not all, but you know, the problem with vignetting is you got to know how to move the vignette because going back to one of our earlier principles, vignetting by default vignettes so that the center of your picture is the brightest part. You need to know how to move that part, that focal point, right, in your vignette so that it's on your subject, which may not be center, probably isn't if you followed the rule of thirds, right?
Yes.
Okay, so emphasize through selective lighting, and then just to make a point, which we may make again, you can do it in camera, you can do it when you set up the shot. We will not penalize you if you did it in your photo processing software. That's fine. We believe in using all of the tools available to you, not being limited to what you use at the time that you took the shot.
Right. Part of when you use the photo image editing programs is the big effort there is not to be overly heavy-handed all the time, and to so that you're not thinking about, oh, I'm looking at a vignette. You know, sometimes a vignette can be just very subtle, but be very effective as well.
Now, we just talked about how you can achieve that through in-camera work or through photo processing software. The next principle is another one.
It's called
can be done in camera, or many people do it after they take the shot.
Yeah, and it's very similar in sense what we were just talking about. It's emphasis through selective focus. So what we're talking about there is you actually be very careful about what you focus on, and separating your subject from, let's say, the background. And so your subject is in focus and everything else is not in focus.
And this is because, just as with the light, your eyes go to the lightest part of the photo. The corollary is they go to what, Michael, in terms of focus?
It goes to the part of the picture that's actually in focus.
The sharpest.
And that's why often people say, well, focus on the eyes, because they want you to, you know, when you look at a portrait, you're going to go right to looking at that person's eyes first.
So the classic way to affect focus in camera is through which of your settings?
Through the aperture setting. And what you would do is set your camera either on manual or use aperture priority mode and open it up to the widest aperture, which is the lowest number. So like f2 or f2.8 or whatever your camera lowest number would be, you'd do that. And then that would let your subject be most in focus, and then everything else will be defocused that's further away from the subject.
If you didn't get it in camera, what do you do?
And if you didn't get it in camera, what would you do? You'd use your image editing program, and you have a number of ways, techniques to do that, including some products that are that specialize on that. There's one called Focal Point from On One Software, which you can get with a free trial, which is a plugin for Photoshop or Elements, I believe.
Yep.
And I'm not sure if they'd also do aperture now as well.
I looked it up today. I didn't see aperture on that product's
But they list. Have a pretty cool tool where you can basically, you pick your focus point, which doesn't have to be in the center of the frame, and then you have all these adjustments for blurring all the other areas that you want to be out of focus, which is a very nice, quick, easy way to do that.
And, you know, you don't have to buy it. There's a free trial. I forget if it's a 15-day free trial or a 30-day free trial, but for the purposes of this contest, you know, you got Elements of Photoshop. You want to play with Focal Point, go ahead and do it. We have no problem. Like we say, if you want to use filters and plugins and processing tricks, that's fine with us.
There's also a special lens that you can use called the Lens Baby, which is also designed for this type of effect, which makes a very small part of your frame in focus and everything else blurry.
Actually, we are having Craig Strong from Lens Babies on the show in a couple of weeks.
Excellent.
Do you know that?
No, I didn't know that. Thanks.
Well, that's true. Okay, so selective lighting, selective focus, the last two principles we spoke about. The next way you can emphasize your subject is through motion. Michael and I always try to think of a photo contest that's going to be challenging. We also try to think of contests that don't lend themselves to sending in a photo you already have in your library. Now, again, we're kind of agnostics. If there's a shot that you have that fits our theme perfectly and you want to submit it and you took it last year, what the heck? Go ahead and submit it. But we'd rather challenge you to take new photographs, because that's part of the show, is to motivate you to take photographs. So last year, we tried to think of a subject, a theme, if you will, that nobody had in their library. We tried to think of a kind of picture that people just don't take. And we had a contest called Food on the Move. We said you had to take a picture of food, and the food had to be moving, because we figured not that many people probably have taken pictures of animated food in the past. We got amazing, amazing entries. Michael, we'll have to figure out a way to link to that gallery.
That was a fun contest, yeah.
It was a crazy contest. Michael and I thought we'd get five entries. We got hundreds. And the finalists and even many of the others that didn't make it to the finals were outstanding and creative and funny and interesting. So would that, you know, part of what that underlined is how you can use motion in a photo to make it more interesting and alive. Since the topic of the theme of this contest is the joy of photography, think about how motion implies joy and creativity and excitement. Motion might not be a bad thing to do for this contest. Not that I have a fantastic concept on how to do it. That would be yours. You could take a picture of a DSLR falling onto a concrete floor, but I wouldn't suggest it. I don't know that it would be joyful, but there'd be some action. You can really capture motion in a photograph through either blurring the subject. So the blur of the subject shows that it's moving, right? Shooting at a slower shutter speed. Yep. You can show motion sometimes by freezing the subject, by somebody who's, you know, jumping into a pool and obviously they're in motion, but you took that at a fast shutter speed. And so you froze that person in a pose in which you would never normally see them, right? The magic of photography.
Well, yeah, they'd be stuck in midair, totally frozen and perfectly in focus. Yeah.
You get the expression on a diver's face that you otherwise would never see. Then sort of the third way, which is a bit of a combination of the two, is to use panning. Again, this is something you want to look up because we don't have time to go into panning. But panning is a way where you keep the subject in focus. You're shooting at a slow shutter speed, but your camera is actually moving, following the subject along their plane of motion so that the subject is in focus, the moving subject, and it's the background that is blurry.
Yeah, you pick something like a 15th or a 30th of a second as a shutter speed, and then you just follow the subject at the right exact speed, and hopefully your subject will be in focus, and everything else will be all blurry.
And what you got to know about panning is it is hard. It takes a lot of practice. It's often better accomplished with a tripod that is on a mount that you can pivot. Otherwise, you pivot with your hips. It's kind of a little bit of a belly dance to do panning. But also a very effective kind of an advanced swim method of showing motion. So you can emphasize your subject either by showing them blurred in motion so that your eye is going to look at them because they're different in the picture. They're the blurry thing. You can emphasize motion by freezing it because you're showing something that people would not normally see. Or you could emphasize it by panning, which is a great way to do it because your background is blurry and your subject is in focus, but that is a tough technique to get right. I've done it where, you know, you'll take 50 to 100 shots and really only in one or two did you get it right, where you moved your camera at exactly the correct rate to keep your focus and subject while blurring the background.
Another way to do it, actually, just I'm thinking about it, is if you're using a flash, you can use something called it's called dragging the shutter. If you have your set your flash to rear sync, and what happens is while you're taking the picture, it's recording your ambient light, but then it will set off the flash at the very end of the exposure. So you have something moving, and then it takes the exposure, puts on the flash at the very end, so it looks like you have this trail of where the person was, and it's kind of a cool way of doing it.
Now, we haven't really followed all of the New York Institute of Photography's principles on this. We based this discussion on it. We didn't use all their examples. This next principle is not one from NYIP. In case you think it's stupid, don't blame them, blame us. But we're just going to add in this last one. I'll let you talk about that one, Michael, because maybe it's not so good.
Well, okay, it's called emphasis. We're calling it emphasis through color. And techniques that we've used before are what we call spot color, where you essentially take a photograph and then desaturate. You basically desaturate everything, but you're only going to use one color in your image. So if it were something that had a red heart in the picture, you would desaturate everything and have this little red heart showing in red.
But desaturate completely to the point where everything else is black and white.
Yeah, so it's basically you're seeing a black and white image with this one, when you say spot color, there's one monochromatic color of red or blue, whatever it is that you want to set the tone. Spielberg used that technique in one of his movies. What was that? that Holocaust movie?
Schindler's List.
Schindler's List. Wasn't there like a little girl in a red dress or something?
I can't watch Holocaust movies.
It was a tough movie. I watched it one time. I can't watch it again. But anyway.
Yeah, I saw Life is Beautiful and I was traumatized. So what is the other way?
Another one is similar to that, where you're going to desaturate, but then whatever you want, where some of the image has its full range of colors, the subject, let's say, might have its full range, or it could be a subject or just an object that they're wearing, like a ring or something like that, has its full range of colors, and you want to focus on that object. And then everything else is desaturated, black and white.
Now, in order to do that, you either need to set up a very elaborate setup of, you know, things that are neutral colors. One thing that is brighter, you know, an example of that would be if you had a woman at a funeral where everybody's wearing black and white and she's wearing a red dress at the funeral, beyond the fact that she would be rather inappropriate and perhaps a bit of a hussy. She would also become the subject of your picture, right? Because she's the most colorful thing in the picture right. That will draw your eye.
But you wouldn't just have the red dress. You might have the whole woman.
In the dress, not a dress.
Woman in the dress, right, I'm saying. Yeah.
So that would be one where, you know, naturally the color of the shot as you took it is going to tell the story and draw your eye. But typically, you know, it's something much easier to do in post-processing. There are many ways to desaturate your photo, not to the point where it's black and white, like in the previous example, but just to the point where the colors are less vibrant and your subject is more saturated or has higher vibrancy. And that's easy to do in a number of photo processing programs. Google it, use the help menu, check out one of Scott Kelby's book.
Yeah, we also talked about using... enhancing a color of just an object. So you can leave your image pretty much alone, but take one particular object and either make it more saturated or particularly, I guess, less saturated, but we're thinking more saturated, more contrasty, or possibly even changing the color of that one object, you know, to totally different, you know, make a blue frog instead of a green frog or something like that.
Right. Right. You know, and typically leaving your picture normally saturated and then hypersaturating something to draw attention to it, unless you're doing it for sort of a pop art effect, usually does not look good. You know, really pumping up a color generally looks very fake and altered, which sometimes is the point of the photo. You want it to look, you know, surreal. But, you know, if you're going for a naturalistic look, Michael and I have both seen a lot of pictures where people hypersaturate something. It just looks silly. You know, we know they don't want it to look silly. They want it to just look
cool. It has to either – it doesn't always have to look realistic, but it has to look somewhat
– it has to be deliberate. It has to make sense for the picture.
It has to be aesthetically pleasing.
Right. Okay, so now we've gone over some examples of how you can emphasize your subject. We've also given you the theme of the contest, which is the joy of photography. So that's number 1 and 2 on the New York Institute of Photography's checklist. So with that theme, when you take a picture, Michael, just quickly run through what are the things the photographer should ask themselves if they've done or if these are ways that they could have further emphasized their subject.
Okay, here's the recap. So you can emphasize by placing your subject off center, following the rules of thirds. You can make your subject larger. Make sure it's the large part. Make sure... think about how you're framing your subject. If you have some objects that around your subject that you can naturally frame your subject, you can use lighting, being the bright part. You can select by make sure it's the part that's in focus, and you can use motion, and you can use color to emphasize your images.
So those are your tools, and when we judge the photos for this contest, we will be looking to see how successfully you emphasized the subject of your photo, and we will be using these as the parameters when we talk about and critique the photo. When you send in your photos, which you can't do yet, when you're not yet set up to take your photos, we have a way to do it from now on that we think is going to be very streamlined. You could absolutely start photographing, and we're not even going to we'll put the cutoff for this contest probably sometime like the second week in January, but we'll decide the exact date next week. But you could start thinking about and you could start taking photos in advance of actually having the opportunity to send them into us. Think about those principles. Our photo contests, as well as our other contests, will once again be administered by our queen of all contests, Laurel Housden. She is a photographer herself. You can check out her work at thephotoenthusiast.com. She always says she got her start in photography by listening to our show, to which we say thank you. She's a great person. We have a lot of fun. She'll be on the show one day. She's going to help us to do some of the – there's a lot of work in administering these contests, as you can imagine. And next week, we'll give you the deadline, which will be sometime mid-January, as well as where to send your photos. When you send your photos in, just know they will be on display for the whole world to see. So don't send us a photo that you're not willing to share publicly, because that would sort of defeat the purpose of the contest. And we're not going to sell your photo, but, you know, you never know what can happen. You have just gotten a taste of the New York Institute of Photography's offerings and principles and the way they think about photography and teach about photography. If you want more today, check them out at nyip.com. We want to thank Ron Risman. We're going to go to his interview in a bit, but thank him in advance because it's great. Stay tuned because he teaches you a lot about how to take a photograph. And let's go to Ron right now, okay?
All right, let's go.
And so we are very happy to have on the line today Ron Risman. Ron, you are the creator, I guess, the editor, the man behind Cameratown. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And why don't you tell everybody what Cameratown is?
Cameratown.com is an information resource for anybody looking for information on from the basic point-and-shoot digital camera all the way up to the pro-level digital SLR. Instead of going to Google and searching these random sites trying to find the information you're looking for, you come to Cameratown.com and we categorize all the latest news, the latest reviews, and now we've added video tutorials, so we search out Vimeo and YouTube and all the different photo sharing websites to try to find videos, whether they be product demos or reviews, Photoshop reviews, that kind of thing. And we categorize them so that from one area, from one place, you can find all the reviews that have been written, let's say on a Nikon D90. You come to Cameratown, there are 10 reviews on here now. And the customers or the visitors that come to the site can actually rate the quality of each review. So when they go out to DP Review to read the review or Steve's Digicams or Photography Blog or any of these others, after they're done reading the review, they can actually, there's a little pop-up box, and they can rate the quality of that review so that when another visitor comes to the site, they can see which reviews out of 10 or 15 different reviews, which ones are worth reading right away. I mean, ultimately, I think if you're an enthusiast, you tend to read them all because you want to hear the good and the bad. But initially, when time's limiting and you're trying to decide which camera to buy, you have time to read 10, 15 reviews. So you try to find the two or three or four that you value the most or that other people value the most if you don't really sure where to start.
So you kind of aggregate the news for your reader.
We do. That's what we do.
Now, are you doing any original writing or reviewing for the site?
We do. We do original content. I mean, part of my goal when I launched Cameratown was not to try to duplicate what everybody else is doing already. It didn't really make sense to be a 16th review for a lot of these products. So we try to limit our reviews to cameras that maybe aren't getting the coverage that they should be getting covered. Or we try to look at a different angle. Instead of reviewing it from the technical standpoint like DP Review would do, we analyze it from a usability or from a consumer standpoint, which is, you know, truly out in the field. How does it feel? How quick is it? You know, looking at shutter lag, but from a usability, not from a measurement standpoint. And but we don't do a lot of reviews. We do a lot of tutorials. We're getting really heavy into doing Photoshop tutorials. I'm going to be working on tutorials soon for the Master Collection, so covering Adobe Premiere Pro. As video is being integrated into digital SLRs, it's becoming a more important feature for photographers to really learn. So we just did a review comparing different video editing software packages under $100. Uh-huh. And now we just did a camera review from the new 14 megapixel Samsung, the TL34 HD, which is a little pocket sized point and shoot camera. So we do our own content, but really Cameratown is all about finding content no matter who has published it and allowing you to find it and discover it and go out to it.
So do you remember which was your favorite video package under $100?
Yeah, well, you know, it was a tie. You know, out of the three packages, Pinnacle Studio, I think, was probably the most fun to use. The Studio Plus, I think it's version 12, but the most powerful was Sony Vegas Movie Studio 9. Sony handled the AVC HD video files and offered so many more capabilities when it came to overrides, but its interface is not super intuitive. It's almost the equivalent of Photoshop for video. You know, and I know Adobe has their own Premiere, which we didn't really cover in that review. But Sony is very powerful, but it's not as intuitive. And Pinnacle Studio Plus was probably the best all around when it comes to features and usability.
All right. Well, I have a feeling that all of this video on the DSLRs is going to be a little bit of a letdown after all the hype. But we'll see. I've made my prediction. You guys are thinking it's going to be something, huh?
Yeah, well, video is definitely here to stay when it comes to digital SLRs. It doesn't necessarily mean it'll be on every model, but it is here to stay with photojournalism becoming such a big thing for bloggers. With website, you know, the question becomes, what do we do with these videos and these photos that we take? And most of them are ending up online. So because of that, when a newspaper or a blog wants to go out and cover a story, instead of having multiple people do it or multiple devices hanging from you, you have one device that can do both. But it doesn't mean the photographer is going to sit there and do the wedding with video and then, you know, snap a picture here and there while they're right. recording video. So it's definitely going to be a certain market or for certain enthusiasts that want to really experiment with video. I'm one of those. I mean, I'm dying to really see what the shallow depth of field of, let's say, a 5D Mark II can really do. But we're at the beginning, really early stages of what we're going to see, you know, and I know you guys discussed the Red product, you know, a couple of weeks ago, and that's going to be an interesting process to see how that plays out with what they're coming out with.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see where that goes. Well, for people who are interested in shopping, first let's get a little bit of your background. Before you started Camertown, you were in photo retail, right?
Yeah, I was in photo retail. Well, I was in retail for 18 years, of which the last 8 or 9 years I was in running a photography website where people could come and buy equipment. So I'm very well versed with what retailers go through to try to have lower prices or try to put bundles together. So one of the things I really wanted to do when I started Camertown was to make sure I have a deal section. Not only does it benefit Camertown because it helps get click-throughs out to the retailers, but it allows us to aggregate deals. There are a lot of popular deal sites on the web, but they focus on everything, you know, shoes and hard drives and sometimes digital cameras and sometimes computer-related motherboards and video cards. And I wanted to create sort of a deal section just for photographers, so they could come and say, hey, here's some deals on memory cards, here's some deals on some hard drives, here's some deals on some monitors, some digital cameras, lenses, flash units, that kind of stuff. So everything in our deal section somehow relates to photography or what photographers would use in their workflow.
And that's one of my favorite things about your site. I am a big deal shopper. Sometimes I just like to know what's out there. I mean, certainly for the podcast, it's good to know, you know, where the deals are. And you do a great job of pulling those together. And I also want to mention, because I think it's invaluable, you have a twice weekly free newsletter where people can get the hottest deals emailed to them, right?
That's correct, right. The newsletter we call Camertown Direct, Camertown Delivered, I'm sorry. And what Camertown Delivered is that we try to alternate between a news flyer that goes out by email and a deals flyer that goes out by email. The news flyer will still have some deals in it, but the focus is news, and the deals flyer will generally focus on deals. But if there is still some news that we haven't covered in the past email, we'll try to put it up above in the deals flyer. This time of year where, you know, PhotoKeener has already passed, Photo Plus Expo has already passed, there's not a lot of new news. So the past few emails have been strictly deals, and it'll remain that way until there's enough decent news out there to put together another news flyer. So by the same token, it goes the other way too. When you get to a trade show time of year, like PMA, 3 or 4 emails in a row might be just news with a few deals, you know, up above because they're less important at that point.
Right. Well, actually, you have a couple of tips and hints for people to find the best deals on their own, other than to go to Camertown.com or to get your newsletter. You have a bunch of other kind of little tricks of the trade for people to get the best prices on their gear, right?
Absolutely.
So what advice do you give your friends when they're shopping for a camera?
Well, you know, I think it's going to depend on the level of expertise that, you know, somebody needs. But I'm going to assume after listening to your show, they're pretty well versed in digital photography. So it really comes down to finding really the camera they want and then the right deal. The most important thing when shopping is narrow down your choices. Find that for, you know, the two or three cameras that you are considering before you go shopping. It doesn't make sense to price shop when you really haven't figured out what camera you want. And I wouldn't really just buy on price. You know, set your price range. If you know you're under $400, then great. Read some reviews. Find the best one or two cameras under $400. And based on what you're going to use it for, figure out the model you want. From there, it's just a matter of price shopping. And you want to go to a comparison search engine. And there are quite a few on the web. And you've seen it has a shopper.com. PriceGrabber has PriceGrabber.com. At CameraTown, you can go to CameraTown's site and click on shopping. And that'll take you to sort of a co-brand. It's CameraTown's shopping site, but it's powered by PriceGrabber. And all you do is enter a model number. So if you're looking for a Nikon D90 and you want to make sure you're not paying too much locally, type in Nikon D90. Up will come a list of, you know, 15, 20, 25 retailers that are carrying that product from around the web. Some of them are local, you know, Staples and Best Buy and Ritz Camera and, you know, a few others. And compare price. Price shopping isn't always about getting the lowest price. It's about knowing how much you're paying no matter where you go. So if you're going to go to a local Best Buy because you don't want to wait 3 days for it to come by mail, just know that, okay, well, I'm going to pay $9.99 here. I can get it online for, you know, $8.79. Is it worth, what am I getting for $8.79? And then balance that, you know, that trade-off. If it's $20, you'll say probably the heck with it and you'll just go local. If it's $100, you're most likely not going to go local. You're going to, you know, go where the deal is and have it shipped to you. This time of year, it's really tough because retailers are changing their prices daily to compete with everybody else that's running their weekend specials for Thanksgiving and that kind of stuff. But there's definitely deals to be had out there. And I put together a sort of a small list for the podcast, just knowing that this podcast may air after this weekend. So some of these deals may or may not still be current. But the thing to remember is, you know, everyone makes a big deal out of Black Friday. Black Friday is the beginning of the shopping season. It is nowhere near the last weekend of deals. Matter of fact, depending on how Black Friday weekend works, if it doesn't move a lot of product for retailers and they're not going to make their numbers, you're going to see better deals come, you know, the week before Christmas or 2 weeks before Christmas. So this is not the end all be all weekend for shopping.
Well, you know, I bought a camera completely on impulse today. Speaking of Black Friday,
what'd you buy?
It was a camera that I've never even heard of. I've heard of it, but it was a camera I never considered buying before. But I went to the Apple store. They had the Apple store here in the U.S. had a Black Friday sale that was online, most of it, because their stores don't have a lot of stock.
Right.
I bought a Sanyo. I don't even know how to say it. I think it's an Exacti.
Exacti, yeah.
And you know why I bought it? I bought it because it was half price on the Apple site. It was $200 down from $400. And I did some comparison shopping. It was the cheapest I could find it anywhere else was $350. So, you know, it was so what is that? That's $150 less than anywhere else.
Right.
And I said, you know, for that price, let me buy it. And then I'll read up on it. I'll get the box and see if I like it. I can always return it to the Apple store near my house. Or maybe I'll have gotten a good deal. But every once in a while, those shopping gods kind of take over your sense of reason.
Right. So this is exactly what you bought. It's probably the high-def little video camera.
It's a little high-def. Well, they call it high-def. I don't think it's high-def. But a little hybrid video camera. I think it's 640. What is it? 640 by 420. Which is standard def, and it's 8 megapixels, and it fits in the palm of your hand.
Cool.
And it, you know, it's just something to use with the kids and when we're clowning around. It got good reviews online as far as I could see. I figured, what the heck, let me pick it up. And, you know, between now and the time I break the seal on the box, I can always change my mind. But I felt like it might not be around at that price. And there's a little bit of that urgency at this time of year, right?
I get caught. You know, it's funny. I have a daughter who's 17, and she got up at 3 a.m. to go shopping with her friend so she could be at Kohl's and all the other stores that she wanted to go to at the mall at 4 or 5 a.m. And this year, for some reason, I didn't really, I've been busy putting together deals for CameraTown.
Right.
And I just haven't really been all that excited with what I've been seeing. And last night about, it had to be right around midnight at 12:30. I'm out there searching Sears and all these different websites. And Sears happened to have a deal that I couldn't resist. And I've been trying to. I may not keep it. We'll see what happens when it comes. But they had an HP 2133 mini notebook, you know, one of these 2-pound notebooks.
Yeah, the netbook.
Yeah, the netbook. and it had a 120 gig hard drive. Well, we think their specs on their site are horrendous. They list both 120 gig and 160 gig because they took copy from HP's website without realizing there's multiple models.
Right.
And I called them today, and all the guy knew was what's on the website, so he just basically said, if it's not what you want, when you get it, you can send it back. But when I track down the part number on other sites, it's got 2 gigabytes of memory, you know, for RAM, 120 gig hard drive. Processor slow. It's 1.2 gigahertz Intel processor, but not a speed demon by any means. And I'm thinking that'd be great to take to trade shows like Photo Plus and PMA. I can travel light. I have my wireless connection. But they had a deal, and they still have it on the site, but it shows out of stock right now. It was $599 or $549, but an instant rebate down to $399. And there's a lot of netbooks at $399. I mean, there's a ton of them. Acer has theirs, and the EEPC has theirs. But this, with 120 gig hard drive and 2 gigs of memory, and the HP name and the full size keyboard that DHP has on it, seemed to be a home run for price. You know, I did my price searching on the web by going to different retail stores and eBay and seeing what things are going for, and it seemed like a great deal. So I didn't need it, but I'm thinking, okay, I could find a use for it. So I purchased it last night on Sears. And we'll see what happens. I never thought I'd buy any technology product at Sears.
Listen, sometimes in this season, you have to buy quickly and perhaps return slowly. I saw today Amazon.com runs specials every hour on the hour.
Yeah.
They had a special for 1 hour. I didn't even have time to tell anybody about it on Adobe Photoshop Lightroom for, I think, $124.
Wow.
Which is cheap.
And that
was usually
$199.
It was full version.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So they could just go buy real fast. So I say, you know, buy in haste, return in leisure. Now, in general, when I go look at your site now, and I just ran the D90 search right after you mentioned it,
right,
in your shopping comparison, some of the dealers on here are dealers that I've heard of. There's Newegg,
right,
there's Dell, OneCall. There are others that are coming in at lower prices,
right,
that I've either not heard of or that I've heard of, and in my mind, at least, they have kind of a janky reputation, right?
Right.
I think they're a little bit of a shady operation, but how does somebody know that? How do you recommend somebody kind of scope out an internet retailer?
Well, all right, here's the important thing, and you said it in your remarks, which was the brand you've heard of. So you've heard of Newegg, you've heard of OneCall, you've heard of Ritz Camera, obviously, and Best Buy and Circuit. The problem is some of the brands that you've heard of, maybe not at this time of year, but most part of the year, they tend to be the same price. They tend to be at what manufacturers call MAP. MAP stands for Manufacturer's Advertised Price. This is a price that manufacturers say to the retailers, as long as you advertise it at this price and no lower, we'll pay for the ad. So if the ad takes up 20% of the page, we're going to pay for whatever portion that is out of your co-op dollars.
So I never knew that. So the big camera companies and the big retailers, the camera company pays for the ad space for their camera?
They can't. Yeah.
They might.
Yeah, absolutely. And the bigger the retailer, the more committed the manufacturer is to the advertising process. You know, when these companies do these 8 or 16 page flyers that are in the circulars on Sunday, you know, those ads are, for the most part, paid for by the manufacturers through either co-op dollars or extra advertising funds.
Okay, so that's the big boys and girls get that. What about these little people I've never heard of?
Well, the little guys, I mean, you have some little guys that are truly legit, some little guys that are truly illegit. And all I can say is, and this is really, you know, we know that B&H Photo is legit. Adorama is legit. These guys are in New York. Hunt's Photo and Video, located in New England, is legit. Although I don't think you see them on the search engines on like Price Grabber.
No.
But if you Google them, you can find them. But then you've got guys that are questionable. And I can't talk for the legitimacy. You know, that's not really my role because I haven't had experience with a lot of these guys. But,
I don't want to get sued, so don't use any names.
Yeah, I'm not going to mention names. But when on CameraTown, when I run deals, if customers ever have a bad run-in with a retailer, they can email me. If I promoted them anyways, email me and let me know. And I will not include them as long as I find, you know, if it's not an oddball. I mean, even when I was in retail, I know that, you know, the whole story is you can't please everybody all the time.
Right.
You want to and you try your best to do so, but sometimes your offering is not exactly what the customer had in mind, so they're upset. But for the most part, read reviews. When you go to PriceGrabber.com or CNET Shopper or any of these shopping comparison sites, they have reviews that allow customers to actually rate their experience with a retailer. You want to sort of read between the lines when you read these reviews. The reviews you really want to read are not the positive ones, the negative ones. Because mm-hmm. retailers sometimes, especially the retailers that are less on the up and up, I guess you'd say, right. they tend to go out and write their own reviews, so they can at least add to the positive reviews on their site. So they're not typically going to leave negative reviews, at least not for themselves. It doesn't mean they can't leave them for somebody else. So you typically want to read these reviews and read the negatives. The negatives tell you a lot either about the person writing it or about the retailer. You know, sometimes you read a negative review and the person writing it is in the wrong. You can mm-hmm. just see, you know, they describe it, and right now they're passionate. Usually when they write these things, they're, especially the negative reviews, they're passionate about what they're writing because they've just been ticked off by somebody on the phone. And, you know, you read their story and you decide whether the retailer handled it correctly or not. If you find, you know, I call it the Siskel and Ebert theory. This is what I always go by. Majority rules.
Mm-hmm.
Find a lot of negative reviews. Chances are your experience is probably going to be negative.
Right.
If you find a ton of positive reviews, but just 1% or a small percentage are negative, read those, see how they relate to how you would handle it. But most likely, it's one of these situations where the customer may have been in the wrong, or the retailer just could not have done something. Maybe somebody wanted to return something 3 months later, and the retailer couldn't take it back at that point. Being that I was at retail for a long time, I understand both sides of the, you know, the fence. But a lot of, you know, customers who aren't in retail don't really understand. You know, it's their way or the highway.
All right, let's go. You're on your webpage now, right?
Yes.
Now do a search for D90.
Okay.
Okay. Let's pick the top one, which
the kit
on Camertown is the kit.
Okay.
With a low price of $1,059, right?
Yeah. What I do too. That is a low price. Usually, when I come to this page, the first field I click on or the column is the price column.
Right.
And right above that first record will be the headers. And if you click on price, it'll then resort them by price.
Okay, so now I'm sorted by price. My lowest one is $1,059.
Right.
My highest one is $1,349. So it's almost a $300 difference.
Right. And if you click below that where it says click here for all 18 stores, you'll actually see all 18 stores.
Oh, okay. So you have no control over what's here. I mean, this is a search engine, right?
This is a search engine powered by Price Grabber. So we have no control over what's here.
So looking at this site, looking at this list without naming names, Ron,
right.
are there any vendors here that you would be hesitant to buy from?
Yeah, absolutely. There would be. From this
Me
list,
too.
When I look at this list, I go to the bottom of the list first to see what the regular price is. And I look at like Rich Camera being $12.99.
Right.
That's really the regular price. I'm not sure why Vans is $13.49. It might be an error.
Right.
You know, I'm not really sure what it is, but $12.99, I think, is the suggested selling price for this kit, although it might be $13.99, so maybe I'm wrong. Now I go down the list, and I look for legit – I try to find where what I consider to be legit retailers end.
Okay, so you kind of go up the list, and you draw a line at the last name that you know and trust.
Yeah, so here I have Dell at $11.99. I'm going to keep going. Now I have Newegg at $11.49, and there's a little promo link. If you click on that, a pop-up box will come up saying – get a free 2 gigabyte memory card and a camera case.
Right.
So that has to factor in now to the deal. Okay, you know, a deal is only a deal if you factor in the equation of shipping. Newegg is charging $10 for shipping, so you have to factor that into your end price. Now, I'm going to keep on going. The one I would probably stop at, in my particular case, would be Bydig.
Okay.
Because at $11.39, they're only $10 less than Newegg, so that's not... you know, a $10 difference is not, I wouldn't call that too good to be true.
Right.
Those are the ones you want to be careful of. The deals that seem way too good to be true.
Right.
So they're at $10 less. They also have free shipping. And they also have a promo where they're giving away a free 8 gig memory card. So their reviews seem very favorable. And a lot of people have written reviews for them. They have 26,000 reviews listed. So that's right up there when you look at, you know, Newegg's got 21,000 reviews. So a lot of people have had experiences with Bydig, a lot of favorable reviews, and I've purchased myself items from Bydig in the past, and I've never had a problem with them. It mm-hmm. doesn't mean you won't. It just means that I personally have never experienced bad things with them. If I go higher, there is one retailer on that list, Butterfly Photo, that I've had negative emails about, so I stopped putting them into my deals flyer.
Right.
Aside from that, I haven't had bad experiences. I haven't heard of bad experiences with either of the other two names above it, which is 42nd Street Photo and US One Camera. And I do include US One Camera in my deals page quite often. But I don't include them. It's funny. I try to make this decision, unfortunately, for my readers sometimes. I won't include them if I personally feel the deal is too good to be true. And I've also noticed over the past couple of months that US One Camera's ratings has gone from 4.5 stars down to 4 stars.
Mm-hmm.
So I watched that myself. I watched the ratings. Because if they're at 4 stars now, to me, almost every retailer on here has at least 4 stars.
Right.
So the star rating, if they don't have a 5-star or a 4.5-star rating, you've got to sort of question this.
Right.
Now, if you hold me to this, then you'll say, hey, well, I'll never buy Best Buy because they probably don't have 5 stars. And unfortunately, a lot of the major retailers, the mass merchants, don't. But that doesn't mean they're bad places to buy. So, again, it has to do with a lot of factors. One is comfort level. How comfortable are you with buying from a retailer you've never heard of? And all I can tell you is when you buy by credit card, that Visa, MasterCard, Discover Card, Amex, when you buy using a major credit card over the web, you are fully protected. And that's why I don't mind really gambling with a lesser-known retailer. If you have a bad experience and the retailer doesn't want to help you after the fact, yes, it'll be a headache. You can send it back, make sure you get a signature required, and if they refuse it, you can get a refusal notice from UPS, and you write to your credit card company and you explain the situation to them, and they will totally credit you back, and they'll deal with the merchant at that point. The credit card company is always on your side, never on the retailer side.
And so what – I'm sorry, go ahead.
And that, I was just going to say, and that's just very important to remember and know.
So you and I talked briefly before this call, Ron, and just quickly, I know some of the things that your less scrupulous retailers do.
Right.
Sometimes in a brick and mortar store and sometimes on the web, right? It can happen in both places.
Absolutely.
Bait and switch tactics where you put in the order and then they turn around to tell you, well, we don't have that one, but here's another model, which is considerably more expensive, right?
That's correct.
Go ahead.
Websites have become silent salespeople. And sometimes they do a better job than salespeople in the store, not because they're more knowledgeable, because it's just information written down on a page. But a lot of times when people walk into a retail store, they feel as if the salesman's going to try to sell them a bill of goods. So they feel as if, all right, I'm coming into the camera, and then the salesman starts recommending a case and an extra battery and a memory card, maybe because those things are important, but the customer believes or feels that they're just trying to shove a lot of things on me, you know, add on to the sale.
Right.
Whereas on a website, there's no salesman there. So it's really, it becomes your decision. So when you see them there, you don't feel like you're being pushed into it. So you might go, oh, well, what else do I need? Okay, well, I need a memory card. I need a battery. Well, a lot of the retailers online, especially the ones that have really low-ball prices on the main product. So as an example, take a D90. If you're looking at a price that's, you know, hundreds below everybody else, they may still ship this product to you, even though they can't afford to, at least from appearance-wise. But when you get to their website, they will automatically show a list of accessories below that product. Now, that's normal practice. There's nothing wrong with that. However, don't forget to compare the price of accessories. I know there's a lot of people out there that when they're shopping, you know, they spend all this time researching the camera and shopping for the best deal. And then when it comes time to buy the battery or the case, they just assume, well, if the retailer is this low on the camera, they must, you know, how much worse could I be, you know, saving if I go elsewhere for the battery? So I'll just buy the battery from them. So they do. They buy the battery, they buy the case, they might buy, you know, memory cards. And if they don't shop those accessories, they could ultimately be giving the retailer, they could be paying as much as they could have got, let's say, locally at Circuit City, because they just paid, you know, double or triple on a memory card or on a battery.
Well, I know that sometimes there's good reason for this, but another thing to watch out for is after you place your online order, if you get a phone call from the company, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Big retailers will never call you back typically unless there's truly a problem with your credit card. But mid-sized retailers, even legitimate ones, even like B&H Photo or Adorama, they will often call you if the order is big enough just because of the risk of credit card fraud. Credit card fraud is huge on the internet. And unfortunately, the legitimate customers sometimes pay the price for the ones that are trying to rip every retailer off. So, you know, when you hear of a Marshalls or a TJ Maxx getting their, you know, system breached and all these credit card numbers are stolen, There's so many people out on the web will try to actually use their credit cards to purchase orders online. So oftentimes you'll get a call back from a legitimate retailer just saying, we want to make sure you place the order. Can you give me your address again? That kind of stuff. Can you read me the 3-digit code off the back of your credit card? But beyond that, they should never try to upsell you or sell you anything else. You know, they might say, you know, is there anything else I can help you with? And that's fine. But a lot of the less scrupulous retailers will use this phone call and the excuse of, you know, fraud checking, basically, to sell you other things. You know, they might call you and say, well, you know, this product that you ordered online has a USA warranty, but it's not from the manufacturer. It's a gray market product. Do you want to spend the extra $100 and get the, you know, the product from Canon? Or they might say, you know, do you need an extra battery or a case? And that, and they try to do the add-on if you didn't make that decision yourself when you, you know, made the purchase online. Mm. So be careful of that. You know, I'm not saying that the phone call was bad, but it depends on what the content of the phone call is or the reason why they're really calling you back to double check your order.
And just sort of emotionally gear yourself up in the same way you do when you go shopping in a brick and mortar store, that, you know, if the salesperson, you know, crosses the line from, you know, just being helpful and solicitous and informative to where you really get the feeling they're pressuring you or trying to upsell you, just say no. It's the power of no.
Yeah, absolutely. And if they say no, and all of a sudden your product is not available, you know, they call you up, they try to sell you a few accessories, you say, no, I'm going to hold off. I'm going to get the camera for now, and I'll see what I need after the fact. If that happens, and all of a sudden they say, well, you know, the camera you ordered is back ordered right now, and we expect to get them in a couple of weeks, and yet the website showed they had them in stock, walk away. I mean, run. Really. There are definite signs of when to walk away from the deal, and that is truly one of them.
All right, so that's when they call their credit card company, let them know the deal is off. They go over to resellerratings.com and they put in their comment and experience, and they write you an email if it's a photography product, right? So you know what these vendors are up to.
Absolutely. Always let me know. If you have a great experience, let me know. But if you have a bad experience, let me know as well. It's very important, because I don't want to promote retailers on our site that aren't honoring their deals. I mean, it's one thing. Unfortunately, when I scour the web for deals, I don't always know an ending date. So I typically put in a 1 or 2 day, you know, this deal will most likely expire tomorrow or the next day. But sometimes they end prior to that. Sometimes they end and I can extend it. You know, I go checking, you know, the second day to see if I can extend an offer a little bit longer. But yeah, I mean, sometimes the deals change on a minute by minute basis, especially with like sites like Amazon and this time of year with any site, really. They change so frequently when they update their database.
So, you know, as a consumer, another place where I sometimes feel that I'm being upsold, but I don't honestly know whether it's a good bargain or not, is an extended warranty. And, you know, I never have bought one off the web. I'll buy a lot of electronics from Amazon.com. I'll never buy their extended warranty. But in a brick and mortar store, sometimes I'll kind of do it because I figure I could just bring the thing back in and they'll switch it out if I'm lucky. Do you have a general advice on extended warranties?
Yeah, my advice on extended warranties is, it depends on the price of the product you're buying and the price of the extended warranty and what it covers. Many of the extended warranties extend the labor and the parts for, let's say, if it's a 2-year warranty, you don't really get a full 2 years extension. You might get, especially with video products like camcorders, the camcorders might have a 1-year parts warranty but only 90-day labor. So these 2-year extended warranties will extend the 30-day labor, or the 90-day labor out to 2 years, and they'll add another year to the parts. And while other extended warranties actually add 2 years or add 3 years to the warranty. Some of the brick and mortar stores like Best Buy will actually have warranties where no matter what happens, even if you drop it and break it, they'll cover it. So it depends on the warranty and it depends on the price. I think when you get into a product that's $1,000 or $1,100, if the extended warranty is from a reputable third-party warranty company, not from the store. Stores can go out of business. I mean, we look at Circuit City filing Chapter 11. They're not out of business, obviously, but they file for bankruptcy. They're closing 300-some-odd stores. You don't really want the extended warranty through the store. You want the extended warranty through a third-party backer that, like when I was in retail, we handled GE service contracts. Well, GE, even if they close their warranty division someday, they'll still honor the warranties. GE is a big enough name for us not to worry about that. But, you know, even when I was in the retail business, we had extended warranty companies that went out of business. You know, way back, going back 15, 20 years ago, EWC was a warranty company that went out of business on us. Another one, I can't remember the name, National something. And in a 10-year period, two different warranty companies went out of business, leaving us basically stuck holding the bag. And we did. As a retailer, we honored all these warranties until the 5-year warranties, you know, were expired. So if somebody had a problem, because it's still, you know, as a retailer, if you're a legitimate retailer, it's your reputation online. So even if a third-party company should have troubles and go out of business, if you do right by the customer, you're going to keep that customer for life. And if you don't, you lose them immediately.
And, you know, that is another reason why you should really think about your local brick-and-mortar camera stores when you're doing your shopping. Think about them. You know, if they don't show up in a web search, give them a call, pick up the phone. Because, like you said before, it may be a difference of hundreds of dollars, in which case you may want to go online. But if it's a difference of, you know, $100 or $50 or less, and you can get it locally, and you're dealing with somebody who you know, who you feel is reputable, who has a reputation in the community to uphold, you know, that's got value too.
Absolutely. You know, my suggestion anytime you're looking to make a decent purchase online is if you can find it locally, give the local store a call, ask for one of the owners. You know, we're not talking to Best Buy here, but, you know, a local regional merchant or a local merchant. Ask for one of the managers, ask for one of the owners. Let them know that, you know, you're shopping around, you really want to buy from them locally. But, you know, Dell or, you know, name a couple of legitimate people that might be selling it for less online. Will you match their price or at least do something for me? And then they're almost always willing to work with you. They don't really want to hear 42nd Street Photo or Butterfly Photo. They never heard of these guys, and they're not going to really be willing to match it. But if you approach them in a way where you let them know that you'd much rather do business with them and give them the sale and give them the revenue, because it helps them, you know, obviously sell through their product with the manufacturer, they're much more willing to work with you. But a salesperson doesn't always have that ability. So walking into the store and telling this to the salesman who might be on a commission basis or might be getting a spiff, you know, for selling you the item at full price or whatever their full price may be, you might want to talk to one of the managers or one of the owners to find out, if they'll work with you because you want to work with them. You know, I'm a big believer in win-win. So if both parties can win, you're much better off.
And just so people sort of understand the landscape, if you're talking about a newer camera, something like a DSLR, one of the popular Nikons, Canons, Pentaxes, Sonys, whatever, these dealers don't have a huge margin per unit, right? I mean, it's not like they're making $300-$400 per DSLR.
No, and this is something to keep in mind. I can't really speak for anybody's margin in general, but the photography business in general is, you know, a 12 to 15 point margin at best. I mean, at best, you know, most of the time they're working on 8 to 10 points. And if you look at web pricing, they're working on 5 points.
Sometimes. And my understanding of the local stores, though, is the margin is even narrower for the camera. You know, maybe they'll do a little better on accessories.
Correct.
But on the camera, they're really working on a tight margin.
Yeah. Well, you know, without getting out the violins and playing music in the background here, retailers, we all, as a retailer, or no matter what business you're in, you always want to get the highest price you can get. You know, whether you're a carpenter, a plumber, a real estate agent, you know, you're always looking to get the most value out of your product. But retailers know that in a world where the customer is one click away from getting a better deal, they're almost always willing to work with you if you bring it up.
Right.
And it doesn't mean they can match the price, but, you know, if they come in, you know, $20, $30 within range and they're happy and you're happy and you don't have to sit there and wait 3 days for it to come by mail, and if you have a problem, have to ship it back, you're much better off buying it locally. And plus the advice that a local salesman can give you, if they're knowledgeable, is can save you hundreds. It can save you from making actually a buying mistake. You might go in there with intent of, you know, selling your Canon lenses because the Nikon D90 just came out and you heard it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. And you might go in there and actually learn something that you didn't know about something else that might keep you from selling all your Canon lenses and switching to Nikon or vice versa. The amount of knowledge that, you know, they experience this day in, day out. They get to play with this product while it's on their shelves day in and day out. Unfortunately, trying to find a salesman that truly has the passion for what it is they do is rare. And you find that usually at the small local level, not usually at the mass merchant level.
No, I agree with you 100%. And when I say, you know, a local retailer, not a realtor, don't buy a camera from a realtor. Well, maybe on Craigslist, but with a local retailer, I don't mean the local big box store. I mean the local camera store. And, you know, our local one here is Pen Camera. And I've gone in there and literally have received an hour of tutorial on DSLRs, that was, you know, invaluable. It was terrific. And, you know, they'll sit there and they'll teach you about shutter speed and aperture priority and walk you through the different models. And, you know, there are times when I've seen people take up an hour of that salesperson's time and then they leave. And you know that person is going to go and buy that camera for $50 less on Amazon.com after they've gotten all that personal service. It really peeves me. So I always like to put a shout out to the local guys to at least, you know, look into it.
It's funny. When I was in retail, when I was on the floor selling, I truly loved what I did. I mean, I had a passion for it. And you know, 98% of the customers that come in appreciate that. And a few of them take it for granted. And it does. It can eat at you. You know, you spend, I mean, I can talk forever sometimes, but I mean, I remember our store would close at 6 and I'd still be in there at 9 o'clock with these customers, helping them make this decision and to only find out that they're going to think about it. And I never see them again because they, you know, back then it wasn't so much the web.
Right.
We didn't, you know, the web really started in like 99, 98 for us for big retail sales. But it's discouraging. So when you walk in and you take up an hour's worth of their time, at least add some value to that. I wouldn't mind paying the retailer a little bit more for that expertise, but you don't want them to rip you off by the same token.
Right. Oh, hey, buy a camera bag. You know, we could talk all day, Ron, because I love this kind of stuff, but it's the day after Thanksgiving. I know you need to go. You told me you're going to go on the treadmill for a couple of hours, right? After your Thanksgiving meal.
I eat chocolate dipped strawberries.
The more I hear you talk, Ron, the more I hear the New Englander in you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm from New Hampshire and grew up in Boston, or Medford, actually, outside of Boston.
You're starting to sound very Kennedy-esque to me.
Oh, no.
So before I say that I'll vote for you, let me just point out one other great thing about Camertown is you often have some very generous contests that you run. Currently, there is the big fifth-year celebration. You're giving away thousands of dollars in prizes. I know that's true because I know that these things are worth a lot. The grand prize is a Pentax K20D digital DSLR with a 18 to 55 millimeter lens. People who love Pentaxes are in the minority, but they are very passionate. People love the Pentax line once they get into it. So that's a great prize. And there's also lens babies and bags from our friends at Think Tank Photo and a bunch of other goodies that people should enter. So check out Camertown, enter the fifth year celebration giveaway, and you're also going to do a giveaway for the listeners of this show, right?
We are. We're going to do a giveaway for the listeners of the show. We're going to give away an MROC camera bag. And let me just bring up my notes here.
It's the Grand Canyon.
It is a Grand Canyon. Is that the 517?
It's the 517 MROC Grand Canyon. It's an $80 value. It looks like a real nice DSLR bag. Will carry your body and a couple of lenses. And MROC is a brand that it's not like one of the first ones that come to mind when I think of camera bags, but they're one of those brands that are really trying to get out there and make a name for themselves, right?
Yeah, they've been around really for the past few years, and they've really made a decent name for themselves online for photographers that have used them. Their bags are great. They have a whole lineup of bags. I think they have like 15 or 20 different models ranging, and if you go to the site, they're from low to high in price. They have backpacks, they have roller bags, they have, you know, everything for the professional. As well as the consumer with point-and-shoot cameras. I just want to mention on a contest that we're doing, during our 50th celebration, because the contest is running so long, it's actually running through September of 2009, we're going to have grand prizes virtually every quarter. So the Pentax we're going to be giving away at the end of January, and that was really that was given to us by Pentax, which is very nice of them to support us. And they're also including a sling bag with that, you know, as well as their 18 to 55 millimeter lens. And then Think Tank Photo is supporting us with the Airport International the version 2, which is a $350 roll bag for photographers. That's going to be our second grand prize coming up. I'm not looking at the site right now, but I think at the end of March. And we're going to be announcing other prizes throughout. And it doesn't cost you anything to enter. It's just signing up for our email list or following us on Twitter, that kind of stuff. You have multiple ways to actually enter. So you can enter more than once.
Yep.
So I just wanted to mention that.
No, that's sweet. No, actually, The rolling Think Tank Photo Airport International bag is the end of February. The end of March is a Lens Baby Composer.
Yeah.
So there's even more goodness than you remember off the top of your head, Ron. Order to enter the contest that MROC and Camertown are sponsoring for Digital Photography Life, you need to go to Ron's site, which is Camertown.com. And on there, right under Camertown, is a tagline where it says that Camertown is blanking the photographer in you. It sounds a little bit risque, blanking the photographer in you. So send the correct answer, which is the word that goes before the ing, just what the heck Ron is doing to the photographer in you. I hope it's not painful. Send your answer to Digital Photography Life. Send it to us by January 1st. We'll have this drawing the same day that we're going to do the drawing for the full version of Adobe Photoshop CS4 that we talked about in the last show. And we will pick a random correct entry. Just make sure you put Camertown in the subject line and the correct answer in the body of your email. And we will select somebody at random and hook them up with you. And you'll hook them up with the MROC, right?
That's correct.
Well, you know what? I don't know if M rocks, but you rock, Ron.
Well, I don't know. I think it's my sponsors that rock, actually, and the people that come to the site rock. Well, I work my butt off. I don't really have time to rock.
Well, you're too tired to rock. So we who are about to rock salute you. Thank you, Ron, for coming on. We'll call on you again because we always like a lot of shopping advice on this show.
Well, I appreciate you calling, and I wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving. Hope they had a great weekend. And hopefully we'll talk to you guys soon.
Yeah, and sign up for Ron's newsletter. It's free. It's worth it. And you'll find out about deals you might never have heard of and maybe save yourself a couple hundred bucks in the process. So thanks, Ron, for coming on. And enjoy the rest of your digestion from last night.
Thanks, Scott. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you, Ron. That was a terrific sort of summary of the best ways to get a bargain and what to watch out for when shopping for a digital camera. This is the season when a lot of people are doing that. And so is January, because January is when you find out you didn't get the digital camera you wanted and now you want it. So take Ron's advice. He's a great guy. Check him out at Camertown.com. Sign up for his newsletter and make sure you enter the contest for the MROC camera bag. We want to thank everyone who has written 5-star reviews of Digital Photography Life on iTunes. Most people who find out about a podcast are searching on iTunes. They'll look at the overall rating. Sometimes they'll read the individual reviews. And so a 5-star review is really the mother's milk of a successful podcast, because they'll just take a look at the rating and maybe read some reviews and decide whether or not they want to listen or subscribe. So I'm going to quickly run through the 16 names of people who submitted 5-star reviews to Digital Photography Life on American iTunes. I always hate doing this because people have silly, silly names on iTunes, right?
They do.
Hey, Michael, while I am doing this, you can read ahead the list and try to figure out how you pronounce the next to last name. I'm going to ask you to do that one because I don't even want to try it. So here are the silly iTunes names, but of the very nice people who wrote reviews on iTunes that will help us to build an audience. That is Kangster, Bay State Paul, Johnny Go Heavy, Blue Bry Guy, Ben D 828, Fam B, Miss B 12587, Libby 21, Slack 12, Lynn in Potomac. If that's Potomac, Maryland, give me a shout. Lynn, you're a neighbor. We'll go shooting together. Indie Mac Addict, Elry David, Mary G, Been Pimped. What's the next name?
It's Ian.
E-O-G-H-A-N.
I believe it's Ian.
All right. Ian, we'll go with Ian O. And Robbie67, you know, they say nothing in podcasting is more fascinating than reading a list of names. So I apologize for that. But we want to really give a shout out and a deep note of appreciation to those people. We would tremendously appreciate if you could take the time to do a 5-star review on iTunes. We always ask for 5 stars because a lot of people, and you'll see, right, 1- and 2-star reviews for sometimes not the nicest of reasons. And so you need to ask your friends to give you the 5-star to kind of offset people who just are overly critical. And, that, you know, if you've done any time in forums and blogs on the web or ever dealt in customer service, you know, it's always the overly critical people with a complaint who are much more likely to participate in any web conversation than people who are positive or have something nice to say. So if you could take the time to write a positive review on iTunes, we'd really appreciate it. If you don't have the time, one way you could help us is just to rate on every iTunes review. You can rate it as helpful or not. Just rate the positive reviews as helpful. That brings them to the top of the list. Right now, the first review anybody sees is a 2-star review for the show because more people voted that is helpful than the positive reviews. And I think that's just because of the way the net skews. So if even if you just click yes for the positive reviews, that will really help us out. Remember to check out Scott's Photo blog, where you can find out about our sponsor Smug Mug's 50% off discount. You'll get the code to use for the first year of service at smugmug.com. Check them out. You'll also have a chance to get your free camera strap from Smug Mug. Remember, although I said it differently in the show today, send in your contest entries to DPL, for Digital Photography Life, dplcontests@gmail.com. Send us other email at digitalphotographylife@gmail.com. You can find us at Scott's Photo Blog or Twitter us. We're DP Life on Twitter. Anything I forgot, Michael?
And to find us at photography@personallifemedia.com. That's our show page.
Is where you can find the show's homepage. Michael, before we started taping today, we were like, finally, we don't have a lot to say. It'll be a nice short show. But do you know how long we've been talking for?
For about 50 minutes.
Yeah. So
not including the interview.
I swear our goal is to get this show down to an hour-long show. Somebody wrote in a review and said, you guys are long-winded. We are long-winded. We've got to cut that out, Michael. But I hope it was helpful and interesting, right?
Yeah, I guess we'll have to be short-winded.
You know what? We need less wind, Michael.
What
the world
air.
Needs now is less wind. I didn't want to say hot air because that's pejorative. But thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week with details on where you could submit your photos. We are dying to see them, right?
We are.
The theme is the joy of photography. Remember to emphasize your subject through any of the techniques we talked about today, as well as any others that you have. Go ahead and do it. We can't wait to see what you have to offer, and you'll be sharing it with the other listeners of the show. We're big on community here, so we look forward to seeing what you got. Thanks a lot.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.